Did you guys have fun yesterday? Did you enjoy the sessions? Okay, there is even more today. There's more awesome stuff, more awesome content. And it's the same rooms. Remember the Geek School. Remember the Speed Collaboration. Remember the labs, the demo area. So those are the same rooms. Good content again for the next day. And we hope that everybody will be able to find what they came here for. So I want to welcome you all, and let's have another good day. Thank you very much.
When it comes to healthcare, seconds can mean the difference between life and death.
For Partners in Health, time is life. Things change so quickly. The Microsoft Cloud helps our entire staff stay connected and work together in real time. We have 18,000 people around the world. The cloud gave us a single platform to reach across our entire organization, even to the most remote places in the world. We're saving time and money. And every dollar we save is making it to the field to help those that need it.
The ability to collaborate changes how we work. What we do together changes how we live.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome Ranga, Corporate VC Engineering from Microsoft.
Good morning. This time with feeling. Good morning. It is great to be here. It is fantastic to be here. It's a very special trip for me. It feels in many ways like home. I often think about when we have gatherings like this, all of us are here at the same time, at the same place. I wonder where we started and how all our paths through space and time brought us together here like this. Let me reflect on my own path. I grew up in a place called Srirangam. It's in southern India. It's a beautiful, beautiful temple town. It's an inland island. The river Kaveri comes and splits into two and joins again for whatever reason. And in the middle is a beautiful temple. It's the world's largest working temple, I think. It's in continuous use over millennia. We, of course, think it lasted forever. God created it and all those stories. But it's great. I grew up there, and by curious luck, I went to the United States to study and worked in various places. Now I live in the Silicon Valley for Microsoft. Over the years, I've had the pleasure of working with people around the world. Given my own background, where I grew up, and where people came from, one thing has become very evident to me, that any million people anywhere on the planet have the same aggregate potential. You look at people, the aspirations are the same. Extraordinary people, great sportsmen, great poets, you know, various talents, you know, good, bad, ugly, you know, we have our combination of things. But the more you interact with people around the world, the more you realize we're all about the same. In particular, the potential for greatness is about the same. During this trip, I've had the pleasure of interacting with some amazing Kenyans. I had the opportunity to visit some of our partners in Nanyuki over the weekend. Met Chris Baraka, an amazing, inspiring Kenyan young gentleman. Just what people do with their lives, what we have done here as Kenyans, is an inspiration to the whole world. And so my conviction in this sort of a point of view is deepening with this visit. So thank you very much. I'm so delighted to be here. We saw the wonderful video of Liberia and Ebola. It's amazing how implausible technologies come together to solve problems, create value for humans in unexpected places. And that's very inspiring for me personally. So today I wanted to share with you sort of a little discussion about what data can do for us. So, we live in some extraordinary times. I don't say this lightly. You know, we look at the various devices that we carry, so many devices, very, very personal experiences. We have fantastic sessions here on them. You've experienced some of that with HoloLens. We're able to have experiences either with voice or with gesture or with just seeing, in manipulating virtual environments. So many different ways to interact that is very rich, very natural. It's almost as if finally computing is meeting our senses where we are instead of we adapting to the computers. That's one world. Another world where the cloud computing is making extraordinary resources available to every developer. Every developer in Kenya, every developer in the world. That's the second major thing that's going on. The third amazing thing is you put this together to create amazing productivity scenarios. You bring so much of this together. We'll see a little bit later in some examples. And we put this stuff together. It turns out to be an environment that feels like it is just the beginning. The possibilities, we're only scratching the surface of the possibilities. And so these are just fantastic times. I want to give you some context for the data in this context. So data in the world seems to be pouring in from every place. Broadly, you can think of it as data regarding humans. Humans interact with the environment, and this is getting more and more digitized. For example, we're looking at people working out. There's a Fitbit or, you know, band. These sorts of devices are continuously measuring our pulse and various metrics. We want to know what humans feel, what humans do. Every touch is getting recorded. Every like is getting recorded. Every reply, every threaded discussion. Every one of our thoughts and expressions are getting recorded and analyzed. And so data is coming out of humans' activities with the environment more and more. And so this helps us more deeply understand what humans want, what humans' preferences are, what their likes are, what their dislikes are, so that computing can, for the first time, adapt to humans rather than humans adapting to computers. And so this is a world of data. This is one stream of data that's coming in the world. So you see various different examples of this in these pictures. Another broad category is data from the world. We look at the world, there are all these invisible sensors all over the place. There's thermostats, there's fridges that monitor themselves, there's cars that are auto-driving, self-autopilot and things like that. There's data that's coming out of sensors, IoT sensors, all over the place. And that's another great source of data. And it's unclear which is the deeper source because, you know, the understanding humans is an infinite enterprise, as is the understanding the world. And data is pouring out of these, both of these sort of worlds, as it were, the broad categories. And so these sort of come together in what we think of as a data deluge. 50 zettabytes. I had to go quickly look up the dictionary to figure out what a zettabyte was because, you know, the terms keep moving. Well, you know, before I catch up, they're on to the next term. And some of the things that you see here are interesting. These are all projections, so you can debate individual numbers. But the trend is very clear. And in the course of my discussions with extraordinary Kenyans in the last few days, everybody's talking about having more and more data that they can do magic with. And we're seeing this every day. So we're going to see data that's analog, that used to be there, like a phone calls, voice recordings, and, you know, video production like we used to do. These are all analog recordings. That's there. That'll peak and come down. But everything is turning into digital. Digital transactional systems, digital systems of observation, digital systems of engagement with people. And this is expected to go crazy. And so you look at this and say, wow, what an insight we could have on the people so that we can serve them better. What an amazing insight we could have on the world so that we can optimize it better for us. But then it's astounding. This volume of data is just mind-boggling. It's beyond anything we've done before. And so, fortunately for us, there are extraordinary capabilities also developing. These capabilities are broadly in the areas of hardware, extraordinary hardware, and then software that's scalable, and then cloud that enables us to consume it in some very interesting manner. Let me take you through that a little bit. So the hardware, you can think of things that are feeling esoteric. FPGA, these are all very specialized circuits that you think will be in special computers that you buy. But what's happening is these extraordinary hardware is getting easily available in the cloud. This is getting assembled very fast. The entire world of storage that used to be magnetic is completely converted to electronic, solid state. And this is taking over all computers. It's becoming very routine in our world. And then there's the economics of memory. And this is making it so fast to have data, so much data available within microseconds of access. So this is a world of hardware. All this hardware is dramatic, you know, orders of magnitude better than before. So this is sort of the raw material, as it were. Then there's the world of software. This is scalable software. So once you assemble large volumes of this hardware, how do you effectively use them to solve problems? So some of the software that's scalable are big data. So the Hadoop revolution is there, our own data lake is there. And these are capabilities that enable us to sort through exabytes of data for individual queries. And this is a fantastic revolution. We've had a great part in it at Microsoft. We've had it in our labs, in our systems working for a period of time. And so that's an amazing development. And then the world of artificial intelligence, machine learning, we've also had great experience with it. We are approaching small parts of human intelligence. And even that is so exciting, to recognize a person, recognize their faces there. You know, you've all seen that in Facebook and other places. They come to us in very, very small chunks, but what we used to think of as intelligence qualities are all becoming more and more accessible. So this is software that is, again, scalable. We're able to do this. You've seen this before with Facebook. We can do this at a planet scale, billions of people. And we can predict what is going to happen. You'll see some examples later on in the presentation. So that's a second world of software that's scalable software. And then the third world that I see is the ability to interact in very natural ways, with natural language, with Cortana, and bots that show up in various places. So you just feel like you're communicating very naturally with another person, either by typing and so on, or speaking. And this is an extraordinary capability in software. So we've got amazing whiz-bang hardware in high volume, and we have software that then can harness these large volumes of hardware to do magic for us. And the third is the intelligent cloud. So what we've done is to now park all of this stuff together in the cloud, hyperscale clouds throughout the world, planet scale cloud. And this enables us to do two sorts of things. One is speed. That means you can take 10 times the size of the problem, and you can still produce the answers in the same short period using 10 times the resources. So that is speed up. That is, you can do the same thing with much larger problems with much more resources in the same amount of time. So if you need to get some responses on your mobile device in a very short period of time, you can do that as the data increases. You can continue to keep up with that. The other side is scale. So you can say, in the same amount of time, I can solve 10 times the larger problem. And so this is the other side, the flip side of this. And so this is fantastic. And the third one is the economics. This is the thing that's like a drug that pulls all of this stuff together. A Kenyan developer lady here can use solid-state disk, FPGA, thousands of machines, over petabytes of data. You can do queries, you can do visualizations, all in the cloud, get it to show up on your Android device, and you can do that for an hour and then return all those resources. This is like magic. You can bring enormous capabilities, monstrous capabilities of the world to every developer anywhere on the planet to explore new solutions, reimagine solutions to existing problems and new problems that are evolving. And this is the extraordinary capability. So we have data from humans, we have data from the world. This is turning into a data deluge. And then we have extraordinary capabilities that are getting assembled that empowers every developer anywhere on the planet to harness all of this and to make magic with it. So let's see an example of a magic.
We come to work every day to pilot, test, and launch new technology solutions. Real-time ID check is the latest technology example where we at Uber are constantly developing and testing new solutions to predict, prevent, and reduce security risks in ways that weren't possible before. It's through this partnership with Microsoft that we've been able to develop this technology quickly and ensure that every rider and every driver has an excellent experience. Real-time ID check is a prompt that appears in the driver's app asking them to take a self photo. We can do a check in real time to make sure that that identity of the person who took the picture matches the account holder who's been approved to drive. Doing that serves a couple of purposes. Drivers know that their identities and their accounts are being protected, and riders know that the driver who they're with has been screened.
Jen?
Evan?
Yeah.
Real-time ID is a smart technology. What that means is it factors in and addresses the edge cases. The situation where the driver is wearing glasses or a hat and they weren't in the identification that we have on file. The beautiful thing is it can recognize these changes and ask the driver to remove their sunglasses or retake the photo. The partnership with Microsoft Cognitive Services allowed us to go from idea to execution to implementation across the country in a matter of months. Already, we've been able to make thousands of rides safer, and very soon we're going to be making millions of rides safer through this technology.
That is just one example of the kinds of things we can do. I'm a father of two daughters. They travel a lot. They take Uber a lot. They want to be cool, so they take Uber even when they don't need to. But I sleep better knowing that this technology is getting developed that can make it safer for them. That's what it means to me. And what uses is amazing other sort of technologies. So I will take the next few minutes to give you the capabilities. Don't worry about individually following or every detail of this. But I want you to recognize that these are very comprehensive, deep technologies that are available for every one of you, and everyone in Kenya, everyone in Africa, everyone in the world. So we think of this as an overall name, Cortana Intelligence Suite. It enables us to take all this data that's coming from all over the place and then turn that, add intelligence, and drive action. So from left to right, you can take data sources, be able to manipulate them, query them, use various technologies to then drive intelligent action. So let me describe the huge blue blocks here. Information management, the idea here is to take data that's in various places, be able to transform them, be able to clean them, be able to combine them in interesting ways, rationalize them, synthesize them. So that's a group of technologies. So the thing to remember is data anywhere can be combined with data anywhere else in some cogent manner, so with this sort of technologies. And then another set of technologies, which is big data stores. There are so many different types of data with different requirements in technology. So we have very many different sort of technologies to be able to store them and query them. And we have some data stores that are so scalable, it's planet-wide scalable that we have. And so that's the class of technologies on how to store them so that we can use them anywhere in the world, applying all the compliance criteria, all the sovereignty needs, and all of this stuff. The third category of things is the machine learning, intelligence stuff. And you can do analytics over all of this data. You can apply machine learning. You can do it in very interesting ways. You can combine data in multiple ways to train the models and score the models. Use existing pre-trained models. You can do lots of different sort of things. That's a category of operations. Another category of software tools is the intelligent APIs. The face recognition that we saw with Uber, it's a category of things. It includes the bots, it includes the, you know, cognitive services, intelligent services. We're also combining our web search capabilities in this thing. And then you can have visualizations that are very valuable. So you can think of driving intelligent action in sort of two broad categories. One is you can look at the data, combine it, synthesize it, and then visualize it for humans. So humans take the intelligent action. So that's one category. That's with the visualizations. Another action is when it starts to get boring for humans, you can automate it. You can have intelligent action on it triggered automatically. So that's the other thing. So you can derive intelligent action from data anywhere. So we'll dig into this a little bit more. I'm going to take a few highlights of these capabilities and give you a flavor of this. In the category of information management, I wanted to emphasize one thing, which is about the world of IoT. The economics of IoT are such that you can have simple devices, sensors, at very affordable rates that we can scatter throughout the planet. And these are producing very valuable information, both about humans and about people. Humans as well as about the world. And so these things are monitoring us all the time. And so we have this thing called the hub, the event hub, which is about scalable, hyperscale ingestion. So imagine billions of devices around the planet measuring something, maybe weather, or maybe measuring everybody's heartbeat or things like that. We can have this be funneled into the cloud in parallel around the world and in a very simple setup using the event hub. This is the capability. This is the thing that connects IoT to the cloud, gets the data from IoT and gather all of that data into the cloud. And so all of these things compose in different ways. They interact with different capabilities. I'm not going to take you through all of this stuff, but it connects. You should just, the main takeaway is that if you have lots of devices producing lots of data from humans or the planet, anywhere in the planet, we can get that into the cloud in a scalable manner. So this is an important capability. We think of it as hyperscale ingestion. Next one is the data store. So this is the planet-wide store. It's an exascale store, and it can take data of very different types. And we can do either short transactions, like if you have very quick transactions, a little like here, a little, you know, measurement of a heartbeat, a little Wi-Fi signal, things like that. Or we can have large volumes, you know, picture that's taken on the road as the cars travel. All of this stuff can be stored in this one store, and it abides by all of the requirements of compliance. And then you can query that in a flexible manner. So this is, again, based on open source standards. It's based on Hadoop standards, HDFS, and Yarn. And so these are the big data stores. Think of petabyte files, exascale stores. The third category is the machine learning for everyone. It's a very curious field. So first of all, you have interesting algorithms, machine learning algorithms. There are people in the world that are very savvy about creating these algorithms. And so they have the ability to create new algorithms and then be able to add to the mix. But these guys don't know a lot about data and don't know about applications. So we've made it very simple. This system is composable such that people who have expertise in different areas can create their expertise, have the power to express that expertise, but then simply use other parts in a very easy manner. So for example, you can have data pipelines that are created by a data wizard that a machine learning person can simply use to train the machine learning models. Somebody who's an application developer can simply use the trained models in order to recognize whatever they need to recognize. They can invoke the applications. And so this is a very simple method that we think we have created so that we can create recipes. There's a catalog of recipes so that you can say the usual recommendation. If I bought this, you would be interested in this other thing. If you liked somebody's tweet, you may like this other person's tweet. You know, these recommendation systems that are very intuitive for humans, you can operate in systems with the same level of intuition. You can say, give me a recommender system, get it out of the recipe, and you don't need to know about all of this stuff, how that works. And then you still feed in certain data, and then it can give you the recommendation. It's as simple as that. We've made it very simple so that experts can weigh in and contribute their expertise in an interesting manner. And people who are not savvy about all these things can still use them in a very simple way. So that's machine learning for everyone. Analytics over all data. Data exists in all sorts of, you know, shapes, sizes, forms, speed, and all of this stuff. And what we have created is a universal sort of a data query language, analytics, over lots of different types of data. And data that's in traditional systems like SQL, or in non-traditional systems, or new world of systems, Azure Data Lake, we can combine all of this data, any data that you have anywhere, you can pull that together, including on-premise, you can pull that together, do queries over all of them, and be able to extend that with R, with other custom language. You can pull all of this stuff together in a very flexible manner. This distributes, you know, geographically, and you don't need to manage any of this stuff. It is managed completely in the cloud. That's the analytics. Intelligent API. So this is worth some bit of discussion. And so things that we normally attribute to human intelligence. Oh, I recognize that person's voice. Oh, that sounds like my friend's voice. Is something that's baked. You can train, and you can use that to recognize people's voices. You can look at, identify faces, of course. You can take a picture. You can take a picture of this scene and say, how many people are there? Boom. Because we can count the, we can recognize faces, and then we can count them, dun dun dun, put that together. The possibilities are amazing. Natural language. So I want my software to understand English, be able to converse with somebody. Well, there's an API for that. It's called LUIS, language understanding. And so you can use that anywhere you like in your application, be able to take a snippet of language, be able to understand, bring that forward. And of course, this is language dependent. We are increasing that for multiple languages. Our latest excitement is Sheng that I learned about recently. So this is a thing that's getting better and better over time. And then if you think about knowledge, sort of a, you think of, so we have this fantastic hackathon that happened where you can sort of say, you know, country capital. You give two countries, few countries, and give examples, and then just drag and drop that thing. And then it gives you, for more countries, more capitals, it just fills that list for you. And this is something that a human can do, because humans, if they're aware, they see the pattern, they recognize the pattern, and then they're able to fill it out. We can do that with the knowledge system. Why? Because for our search business, Bing, we're crawling the world. We're crawling all the websites that exist in the world, and then we know the entities. So from those entities, these are available called Satori. It's an entity graph of all of the knowledge in the world. So think of a, you know, nuggets of knowledge that is structured, and we can reason about them. And so we can pull that together, and this is fantastic. And then, of course, the standard search is also available as APIs. And so you sort of think about this stuff. You know, this is emotion API. I mean, on and on. You can look at this stuff. This is only the beginning. Think of this as a first 1% of expressing human intelligence through these computing systems. These are all built. These are all packaged. And every one of them is in the you know, wave of getting better and better, accommodating more languages and things like that. And this is just the beginning. And this is a pleasure to use. Already you can see the examples that we have shown are great examples of using these intelligence APIs. We talked about Cortana and bots. There is a bot framework, so you can it's also in the cloud. You can take a look at this and say, use the natural language understanding, put it anywhere in your application, be able to have a conversation back and forth. And these are driven by APIs. You plug it in the right place. You introduce language sort of a key terms. For example, if somebody says this, that's what they mean. So you can teach it certain aspects of your sort of a domain-specific language, as it were. And then in a natural language fashion, you can build bots that are suitable. We had the world's largest hackathon at Microsoft last summer, and the number one topic of interest for all of our employees is bots. And all of our employees created so many different types of bots, and it is wonderful to see, because we made it very easy for them. In just 1 week, they were able to hack and create some bots for various purposes. And so this is the conversational framework. This is, again, the idea that the world of computing will interact with humans in ways that are natural to humans, and is plumbed and built together. And then we talked about the dashboards and so on. So this is the traditional stuff. We've made it dramatically simple for this. So you can just take a look at any data and then be able to generate visualizations out of this. You can take those visualizations and share with people. You can discuss over standard methods for these visualizations. You can have it show up in your websites, anywhere you like. And the way to think about it is, week after week, you can get more and more streams of insight on any data that you like. And this drives the data culture in organizations. So you can take a look at any data, piece of data, and say, I would like this to be available to me forever. Just make it happen. And so we can set it up, and we can make that dashboard show up, and then there's another tile in your dashboard. It continuously gets that data, and then you have that data always available. So over time, any question that you want to ask, you ask it once. First time is exciting, second time is boring. Over time, it becomes invaluable. It becomes second nature to you just to look at something to see that. Just like we look at weather forecasts, things like that. This becomes second nature. This is a business intelligence that is made so simple. So that was a bit of a deeper dive into the world of technology. Let me lift it up back again. This is an amazing set of sort of complex information, as it were, complex technologies. But remember what I mentioned at first, the magic of fantastic hardware, very scalable software in all these different dimensions, and the fact that they're all available in the cloud and prepackaged in different manner is making it very, very easy. Very easy for individuals to take advantage of it. Every developer anywhere in the world can consume the relevant parts of all these amazing technologies in a very convenient manner. And this is the grand opening, as it were. This is an amazing opening for every developer. Every aspiring developer from Nanyuki to New York can do this. Yeah? So let me ask our colleague Scott to come up and give a personal account. Scott is the principal program manager. He's also the superstar of the conference, already the best speaker. What you don't know is this amazing guy also is walking around with a couple of sensors. He's an IoT carrier.
Yeah. I just realized I'm not mic'd up either.
We'll get you mic'd up.
I have every IoT device except my
except
iPhone.
The mic. Yeah.
And that is 100% my fault.
So he is blessed with diabetes.
All right. Yeah.
Type 1 diabetes.
So I have type 1 diabetes. We probably have cousins or aunties or grandmothers with diabetes. There's two types. There's type 2 diabetes, which is something that you tend to get when you're older. It's often diet-based. It has a genetic component. But I have type 1 diabetes, which means that my body does not produce enough insulin. It actually produces zero insulin. So for many, many years, I've had this now for 25 years, I have had to inject myself with these needles. I have to carry them around. And something as simple as flying to Kenya could be in a huge, complicated series of mathematical calculations and time zone changes and keeping the insulin cool and all these kinds of things. But I want to share with you how I'm looking at some data to make that problem a little bit easier.
Fantastic.
So you, the normally sugared, you eat whatever you like. You go to sleep with awesome blood sugar. And then you wake up with awesome blood sugar. And we hate you for it. I met a very, very kind person yesterday who said that he enjoyed my talks, and we ended up talking about my diabetes, and he said, "Wow, I thought you were just a rich white guy from Seattle." And I said, "Well, I'm from Portland." But what he meant by that is he says, when I look at you, I see competent person. But what he doesn't understand is that I have all these things carrying around. I'll show you what's going on here. He doesn't see my disease, my problem, just as I don't see yours. You might be allergic to bread or milk. You may have a wooden leg. Who knows? We assume what we assume when we look at someone. I have an insulin pump that is attached to me 24 hours a day. It's plugged into my body. There's a tube, and this vial is full of insulin. And this thing can deliver insulin to me as I eat. I have to manage every single gram of food that comes into me, but you didn't know that, because why would I lift my shirt? Because that would be weird. But not only is that weird, that's a tube full of insulin right there. I'm going to put that on the ground. But I also have another sensor that's plugged in over here. That's a Bluetooth sensor with a needle about that long that's going into my side, and that is checking the fluid in my body and giving me a chart of my blood sugar every 5 minutes. That's producing over 105,000 data points every year. This is something that you typically do by pricking your finger, right? We all have our aunties who prick their fingers. So this is trying to get that data more often. Imagine if you're flying an airplane from one side of the country to the other, but you can only look at the altitude twice. That's not going to be a very smooth flight. And let's say that you want to adjust the altitude of your airplane, but you can only do it twice. That's what happens when people take shots manually and check their sugars manually, and we want to try to solve those problems. However, governments and healthcare organizations move kind of slow for safety, so we're doing some body hacking. My system is quite complicated. Being a diabetic kind of sucks. I have this CGM, continuous glucose meter. It looks at trend data, and it gives me estimated sugar. I still prick my finger. This gives me estimated sugar. I then count my carbohydrates, which is easy in the United States because everything is labeled with grams, exactly how much. But here, yesterday, when I ate like 10 samosas, it was too many samosas, but still, there was no way for me to know how many grams of carbohydrates are in there. So I guess, and I listen and I react, and I look at my numbers and I look at my charts, and I had a couple of rough hours yesterday. I am actually looking at my sugar and thinking about my sugar probably 10 or 15 times an hour. And you might be thinking that I'm looking at my iPod, but I'm actually checking my sugar. I also have it on my watch. That is what my sugar looks like in a month. It's supposed to be in the green area. The bad thing about this, and we know this from our friends and our relatives who are diabetic, is that diabetics die of diabetes. Okay? Let's just be real. We don't die of old age. We die of diabetes. My goal is to die of old age. That's the plan. Or get hit by an ice cream truck. But that would be amazing. Just to have all the ice cream all over me. It's like he died the way we wanted him to die. This is the first insulin pump. That's the first insulin pump. This insulin pump is 15 years old. Newer ones will have even more technology and more power. As an engineer, as with all engineers, when you have a problem, you solve it with engineering. So when I became diabetic many, many years ago, the first thing I did is I tried to solve it with a Palm Pilot. So I wrote a glucose management application on the Palm Pilot, and I've been trying ever since then. And if you talk to your diabetic friends that you may not have even known are diabetic, but maybe now they'll come out to you and tell you, they have Excel spreadsheets, machine learning systems. They're trying to solve this problem with technology. What I'm using is a pump, which can be very challenging, even in America, to find the payments, to find insurance companies that are willing to pay for these. It's very expensive. There's actually a black market for pumps to get a hold of these things because they're such a useful thing. I take this data over Bluetooth that comes from the implanted sensor, and I send it up to Azure using an open source piece of software called Night Scout. And Night Scout is written in Node, and it's hosted in Azure. and it lets me and my family see my blood sugar remotely. I got a text from my wife late last night because I was having a high sugar, possibly samosa related. I'm not going to say either way. My wife in Portland could see my sugar. Now, I'm an adult. I'm going to be okay. But what if you're a 7-year-old? What if you're a 9-year-old? What if you've never been on a sleepover to your friend's house because your mom or your dad is afraid of your sugars? What if you've never gone on a camping or you never went to visit grandpa in the next city? Technologies like Night Scout and being able to host it in the cloud and view it anywhere and view it on a watch and view it over SMS, get texted information about high sugar. We've even seen parents take old Android tablets, put them in a picture frame, and put them on the wall, showing the children's blood sugar in real time, all again hosted in a cloud like Azure. Glanceable displays. This is information I need. This is my personal dashboard. I'm here to talk to you and express to you the personal aspect of the kinds of technologies that Renga is talking about. Everyone's technology is different. Everyone's challenge is different. You don't know this about me. You didn't know any of this about me before you looked at me. And you don't know the challenges of your neighbors. Might be blood pressure, might be allergies, could be hypertension. Those things can potentially, if not be solved, be made easier. The load can be lightened through machine learning, through bots. I recently got an Amazon Alexa. You've seen these where you talk to it and say, hey, Alexa, you know, order more crap from Amazon. I'm not interested in that. But I did hook up, Alexa, what's my blood sugar? I did that because my wife said I was looking at my phone too much. She thought I was tweeting. I was checking my sugar. So she says, when you're at the dinner table, I don't want you to look at your phone. So now I sit at the dinner table and I go, Alexa, what's my blood sugar? And Alexa says, your blood sugar is, and it tells me that. And it's all fed from data inside of Azure. And this is what Night Scout looks like. I won't share my URL. It's a secret. But if you find me in the hallway, I'll show you how it is, and you can see my actual blood sugar as it moves in real time. Now, here's where it gets interesting. That's the reading of my sugar. Then I have to close the loop. I close the loop. I look at the samosas, and I go, it's about 5 units of insulin. Then I take the insulin, and I'm either right or I'm not. But what if machine learning could actually make the dosing for us? Now, this is where we walk away from what's legal and what's possible. Okay? This is body hacking. None of this is official, but this is the goal. Could we close the loop? This is the read, what's my sugar, and the pump is the right, give me insulin. Now, it could kill me. I could have an extra for loop in there, and, you know, who knows? Why did he die? Well, while true, that was a mistake. So what some folks have done with a group called OpenAPS, Open Artificial Pancreas System, is they took a Raspberry Pi, connected it to the glucose meter. The glucose meter is allowed to be downloaded to a PC. You can plug it into your doctor's office and download the data. So they thought to themselves, what if we just lied and told the glucose meter that we were a PC, and instead of downloading it every few months when I visit the doctor, we'll download it every 5 minutes. So the Raspberry Pi sits there and goes, what's my sugar? What's my sugar? What's my sugar? What's my sugar? Using the open APIs that are plugged into the glucose meter and then stores it in the cloud. Then we have a cell phone battery and a USB stick that lets us talk to the pump. You put all of that in a fanny pack or some kind of a little purse, and then you have the beginnings of an artificial pancreas. Again, totally not legal, but something you do yourself. The hashtag for this is We Are Not Waiting. Yeah, that's pretty special. I wouldn't recommend this for children, of course. This is for adults to know what they're doing, and this is for computer people who maybe have a little bit of technical ability. But right now, I'm using another artificial pancreas system. Think about this for a second. There are 2 competing open artificial pancreas systems. That's how excited people are about this. This pulls data from Night Scout, and this runs on my iPhone. This one's open source and running in Swift. And it's talking to yet another device I keep in my pocket. Excuse me. This is a Bluetooth to radio frequency bridge. So I control my pump by talking to this Bluetooth device that then talks to the pump and closes the loop. And this hardware is open source. So what I'm telling you is that with the power of open source and with the power of hundreds of thousands of data points up in the cloud, and then a future where machine learning and bot frameworks, I could imagine a conversation with a bot about my blood sugar, about recommendations. They could say, yeah, the samosa thing didn't work out. Try this tonight, and here is a suggested dosage. Those are the kinds of things that are only being made possible now in this wonderful data dreams future. And thank you for the opportunity to share my story, sir.
An amazing story. What an amazing story. Another round of applause for our superstar. What was very natural in that narrative is a compelling, real need. And that need has always been there. There have been type 1 diabetes people before. They solved it by some appropriate means, or didn't solve it in some cases. Now, the new world of capabilities enables an individual, in this case, Scott himself, to be able to bring amazing technologies together in a very simple way, very powerful way, to help himself. And you can see, because of all the duct tape and baling wire here, that this is just the beginning. This is just the beginning. You can imagine in the future that all this is working and no while trues, it's tested and you know, all the infinite loops removed, all this good stuff, and that is just fantastic. This is just one person, one ailment, and one solution. And so then you start to realize the power of this. This is a dramatic simplification of awesome capabilities that is available to every person. So here at Microsoft, we have people around the world that contribute to building these amazing capabilities. We call them global development centers. In addition to Redmond, where their headquarters is, we have amazing people around the world. These are 6 global development centers: Silicon Valley, Vancouver, New England, India, China, and Israel, where people from around this area has come together and create these capabilities for us. The voice of Cortana comes from China. On and on. You can think of these capabilities. HoloLens hardware is designed in Silicon Valley. On and on. You can think about all of this stuff. Then you realize, wow, our mission is to empower every person, every organization, anywhere on the planet to achieve more. And we are drawing on million by million anywhere in the world who have the same potential. We're drawing on their capabilities to create this amazing world for the whole world. And these capabilities are also deployed around the world. And so our strategy for our cloud is to create more and more of these data centers closer and closer to the action and abiding by the local rules, local regulations as necessary, and provide this hyperscale capabilities. We have 38 announced regions, twice as much as Amazon. It is simply our strategy to do that. We, in some cases, like Germany, we have created a very specialized one abiding by their regulations. So German companies have the option of either doing their specialized ones or the global ones as their needs fit. And there are trade-offs there. And so this is the Azure data centers. This is, again, around the world. Now you see the pattern. So, more than ever, the world is getting flatter every day. Any million people anywhere on the planet have the same potential. And now, every kid with the Mobingu hotspot, any kid sitting next to a container in Nanyuki can have these same awesome capabilities. Our accomplishments are limited only by our imagination, only by our deep desire to make a difference. Any set of people can do magic. I have seen the magic this week. I've met some extraordinary Kenyans who are taking those matters to their own hands, creating a new world that's a beacon for the whole world. What we have with M-Pesa mobile money here is unlike anything else in the world. And there are amazing Kenyans who are imagining building a wonderful world on top of that, leveraging that, taking advantage of that. And so that is very inspiring for me during this trip. And so for those of you in this room and watching, I ask you, suspend disbelief for a few minutes and ask yourself, if I have a need, something that I'm passionate about, if I have the desire to make a difference on that thing, what would be your data dream? What would be your dream that makes the world better using all these capabilities? And that's the possibility that we have in front of us. Thank you very much for listening to me. Have a wonderful day.